Welcome to Talking with the Experts. This is where we discuss great ideas to take your business to the next level. How do we know these ideas work? Well, it's because we're talking with business owners who are using these ideas. Business owners who have years of experience and expertise. All things business by business owners for business owners. And now, here is your host, Rose Davidson.
Hello, welcome to Talking with the Experts. I'm your host, Rose Davidson from rosedavidson.com.au. Talking with the Experts is all about business by business owners for business owners. You can find it on all podcasting platforms and on YouTube. And today, my guest is Bert Turhart. And we're going to be discussing facing adversity, the hard times, tough people, and purposes. And there are only two choices when making things start going sideways. You can either serve your weaknesses or you can serve your purpose. Either or, but you can't do both any more than you can serve two masters. Now, Bert self-described as a soldier, a sailor, an adventurer, a serial entrepreneur, and he is an author. Just seems to have a knack for knocking off the impossible. He's a fellow of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society, explorer in residence for the British Columbian Historical Society, founder of the Canadian Interactive Waterways Initiative. He's the CEO of leadbrain.ai and the author of, among others, the children's book, Sir Salty Goes to Sea. Bert has sailed solo, nonstop around the world into the Bering Strait, and one to the Aleutian Islands in an effort to follow in the wake of some of the world's greatest explorers and cartographers. Bert, welcome to Talking with the Experts. You've had a very exciting life.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to speaking with you today. And we have some common roots, I suppose. At least I have some tentacles over there in the far side of the world. And whenever people start reading that biography, I'm always looking over my shoulder, wondering who they're talking about. But yeah, it's been my father.
British Columbia. I lived there till I was 12, and then my father decided that we should move to Australia, and I've been here ever since. So yeah. I do miss the white Christmases, I must say.
Yeah, there is something to be said for that. I mean, I never grew up on the West Coast or anywhere near an ocean for that matter. So I certainly can relate to missing a white Christmas. And of all those things, my father, whenever I tell him, my father has since passed away, whenever I would say, "Hey, Dad, I'm going to do this," his typical response was something in the order of, "I thought you were smarter than that." So I'm not sure. I would hesitate to think and to say that he was wrong.
So I guess, how can we, as humans, when we're facing adversity, hard times, where do we find that toughness and purpose that we, that we need to succeed?
Well, I think it's in every single one of us. I've never, in everything I've ever done, whether it's been as a soldier, whether it's been as an adventurer and explorer, whether it's been as a businessman, I've come across incredibly tough people in all walks of life, and it's always a shocker who it actually is. It's never the person you think. It's never the guy who can bench press 365 pounds and can crush a car with his bare fist. It's always someone that you can't possibly imagine. And the mind is way, way tougher than the body. You can drive yourself to extremes in ways that most people can't possibly imagine. And what's really interesting to me about that is that you don't have to look very far back in history to realize how unbelievably tough people were just a few short years ago. And it's true in other parts of the world as well. I mean, I live in this incredibly privileged life here in British Columbia. Life is just so unbelievably easy. Quite literally, you're living like a king. And I don't have to go very far before Mother Nature begins to reassert herself in ways that would make your life unbelievably hard if you had to live outside in the forest for 24 hours. And yet, everywhere in the world, people lived, loved, and thrived in environments that would make our toes curl if we didn't have our Gore-Tex underwear and our smartphones along with us. So You don't have to look very hard to understand that of toughness is in everything that you possibly see. So, and I'm, it's really just a matter of asking. It's really just a matter of deciding, giving yourself permission that you're going to make this happen or you're going to make this work. And once you make that decision, you're the only one that can make it. I can't tell you to do it, and no one can tell me to do it. I have to literally give myself permission. I have to say, yes, I can do this. And then it just, you'd be shocked. I guarantee you that you would be shocked. And I would say that to every single one, regardless of how young or old they might be. And there's incredible stories everywhere around the world of young kids who have done amazing things just because they had to, given the circumstances that they were in, or older people for that matter. And or it doesn't matter, you know, male, female, it just doesn't matter. We just have simply stopped asking ourselves, asking that of ourselves, given the way that given the ease and with in with which we live our lives these days.
Do you think society has become a bit soft, you know, as
Oh my
as we
God.
progress through the generations? I mean, I remember when
Oh.
I was a kid, you know, we could stay out past, you know, when the street lights came on, we had to go inside and you know, we drank out of the water hose, and you know, we didn't have all these, you know, politically correct things. That politically correctness wasn't even heard of back in the day. And you know, so I think society's become quite soft and quite too politically correct in what, you know, they're banning storybooks that we grew up with because they supposedly view people in a negative light, but you know, they didn't do us any harm. They were storybooks. And what do children know about things that, you know, that people now are finding, you know, offensive?
Oh, I agree with you 100%. We as a society, we've become unbelievably soft. And everyone, you know, no one likes to hear, oh, you know, when I was young, we had to walk to school and, you know, to fight our way through wolves and bears. And of course, all that is hyperbole, but you're absolutely right. And in terms of society becoming very, very soft, well, as an example, sailing through the Southern Ocean, I was south of South Africa, so probably close to 1,000 miles off of Cape of Good Hope, headed towards Cape Leeuwin in Australia, and I was hanging on by just my fingernails, just barely hanging on, and I was trying to go to the east as fast as I possibly can to make this trip as short as I possibly could, and I had Cook's biography along with me by a guy named Beaglethorpe. And Cook's track over that same part of the ocean, he was going north and he was going south and east and west and down to 70 degrees south and up, and he's looking for islands. He was looking for the Crozier Islands, named after a Frenchman who saw a smudge on the horizon. And I just looked at that track and marveled, because I had a very good idea of how incredibly difficult it was to sail there. And these guys weren't just sailing, they were bombing all around the place in the same way that you and I might get in a car and literally go to the grocery store. And that speaks to how unbelievably good at what they were doing and how unbelievably tough they were, because it is cold. Like, it's brutally cold. It was snowing, sleeting. The winds are something you can't possibly imagine. And you can take that same experience for those sailors and transport that to, say, Central Canada when Canada was being mapped by guys like Thompson or Vancouver. You know, Vancouver Island, the city of Vancouver, named after George Vancouver, and of course Cook and La Perouse and Mackenzie and Fraser, all these guys. And it's an unbelievably, I could not, when I paddled across Canada, I couldn't believe it. Firstly, how hard it was. Secondly, how good at map making these guys were, because I was trying to duplicate their accuracies, and I was nowhere close, despite all my fancy bits and pieces. And of course, they didn't have the same gear that I had. Of course, they had no maps, because they were making them as they went along the way. Everywhere they went, there was that risk of offending a neighboring tribe and therefore inciting a war, and then, you know, potentially getting everyone killed. So it was just shockingly difficult, and they took it all in stride as if it was nothing. And David, here's an example. To go from Rocky Mountain House to Thunder, to the head of what was the Northwest Company at the time, which was on the Great Lakes, is about 3,500 kilometers. And the people that were here in the interior of Canada did that trip every year, and they did it with their wife and kids. So can you imagine putting your wife and your five kids, like David Thompson did with Charlotte Small, into a canoe and telling them, oh, we're just paddling to Thunder Bay, which is 3,500 kilometers away, for the annual meeting, and then we're going to come home. They went there and back. They did it in literally a matter of, basically 4 months. And that's what it was, just nothing. Most people wouldn't put their kids into a station wagon to go to the grocery store, let alone, travel 3,500 kilometers by canoe in the middle of the Canadian wilderness. And it speaks to, firstly, how unbelievably competent these people were in terms of living off the land and, of course, living, loving, and thriving, like I mentioned, but how unbelievably tough they were. Unbelievably tough, including their kids. So we live so far removed from that sort of hardship that it's hard to imagine. I'm not advocating in any way, shape, or form that, you throw your kids into a canoe and pitch them down the North Saskatchewan River and tell them, I'll see you in 4 months. But there is, we have lost something in this idea that everything has to be safe. You can, there's only a few words that can be spoken. Otherwise, you might be offending someone. It's, the pendulum tends to swing, and I think we've perhaps swung a little bit too far in one way.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that the things that kids are being brought up with nowadays, it's just so cushioned and so unbelievably safe that I'm not saying that you shouldn't keep your kids safe, but what I'm saying is I think that we've gone too far. And there's no room for children to make mistakes, to get hurt, skin their knees, their elbows, stub their toe. I mean, parents are there like, oh my God, they need to go to the hospital. I mean, it's a stubbed toe, for heaven's sake. They're not going to die from anything unless it gets infected.
Yeah, I think that one of the ways to look at it might be that humans learn right on the cusp of, right on the edge of knowing and not knowing. So think of a small child learning how to walk. They're right on the edge of falling. They're right on the edge of stumbling, and half the time they'll take a step and the other half the time they're falling down. So if you prevent your child from getting on that edge and learning how to walk, they'll never learn how to walk. That's how we learn to talk. We learn how to talk by actually, being right on the edge of knowing and not knowing. So we learn in that way, and we learn everything in that way. We learn resilience in that way. You have to actually get right to that edge where you can just about cope, but maybe not cope, before you can develop the muscle, as it were, to learn how to cope with those things that life is going to throw at you. And if you shield, whether it's a child or whether it's an adult, from that edge, they will never learn. And it's to their detriment, not to yours, because you've already learned how to walk or how to talk, but it's to their detriment. And it's of course, it's a balance. Like you said, you can't just pitch your kid out in the dark and tell them, okay, well, I'll see you in a week. Although that's perfect. I know people who've done that, and they get to an age where that's supposed to be relevant. But the point is, there's a balance to be struck. But it's worth knowing that that's where you learn. You learn right at that edge. And if we choose to shield our children, or even the people that work for you, for example, if I hire someone and I want them to do something, I'm going to take that have that person operate right on that edge where there's some knowing and some unknowing. And then I can be satisfied that they know what to do at that particular point. And if I never put them in a position to succeed, quite literally, they will never succeed. Whether it's, and again, that I think that particular idea of the boundary between knowing and unknowing, that context applies to children, to adults, to employees, to everything.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Now there is there's a positive feedback loop that needs to be put in place. So how do we know when to do that, and how do we know that we're on the right path to doing that?
Well, I think that I have a very simple rule that allows me to constantly be reevaluating where I am, and it works. Not just for me, of course, but it works across the board. And it's very simple. It's really just the four P's. So I call it: you need to plan, of course. You need to prepare. You need to practice, and you need to persist. So those four things. So of course you have to have some idea of what it is that you want to do. You have to prepare in some way, shape, or form. Otherwise, you're just stumbling off in the dark. You have to practice in some way. Otherwise, who knows if you're actually going to be any good at what you're doing. And then once you've managed to get to the point where you're able to practice something, you persist in that endeavor. And that brings you back to plan. So as I'm persisting, if I look at, I have a, I reevaluate or relook at the plan, and I'm no longer going in a direction I think that's positive or the direction I think that's useful, then I can tweak the plan a little bit and then revisit every one of those P's. So that's a positive feedback loop. And that works. It's scale invariant. It doesn't matter how big it is, how large something is that you're biting off. As long as you're constantly reevaluating your plan and your process, chances are you are going to succeed. I mean, I have no idea what the future holds. So despite my best intentions and my loftiest goals, tomorrow might be something. I might be presented with something tomorrow that I you know, the proverbial black swan. I'll have no idea what it is, and I'll have to readjust. And if I don't readjust, then of course I'll never succeed in any way, shape, or form in whatever context. So this simple idea of plan, prepare, practice, persist, and then reevaluate your plan, prepare, practice, persist, reevaluate your plan, is it's a surefire way to succeed. I've never known that not to work. I've known that to work as a soldier. I've known it to work in business in scales from large to unbelievably large and small, and I've known that to work as you know as an explorer and an adventurer trying to do something that's just that doesn't make any sense at all. So this idea of persisting, of course, is unbelievably powerful, but you can't persist blindly. You have to have some idea of what you're persisting in has some positive outcome, certainly in the sense of a direction you may want to go.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't just, I mean, if you plan for something and then you persist for, and keep going, and if it's not working, if the plane falls to pieces, you've got to go and revisit everything again.
Of
And
course.
so where did I go wrong? What barrier is stopping me from persisting to achieve the end goal of my plan? And it's just a constant process.
Yeah, it's you've hit the nail on the head. It's a constant process. And what's interesting to me is that, and I learned this a long time ago in the army, and that the soldiers that you have that you're in charge of, they don't care whether you're right or wrong. The worst thing you can do to a soldier is tell him to sit in his hands and do nothing. They'll pretty soon they're just going to be beside themselves. As long as they're doing something, they're happy. And as long as they feel that you are constantly reevaluating what it is that they're doing, they're going to be happy. So a way to translate that is, let's say that I'm faced with a situation and I think of something, and I do it, and it turns out it's correct. I look like a genius, right? Because I'm ahead of the curve. I figured it out beforehand. I'm good for me. Look, I know I'm out in front of everything. But let's say I get it wildly wrong. I still look like a genius because I'm ahead of the curve. I now have figured out something early that doesn't work. Now I can make a better plan or come up with a better X or Y or Z. And I look like a genius again because I've at least done something. So whether you're right or wrong, you're going to come out smelling like a rose. You're going to come out looking like a genius because you've done something. And the key to it all is that you're still evaluating along the way. And as soon as you put the blinders on, it's a death knell, because you can be doing you can be doing absolutely the right thing right off the edge of the cliff and never know it, unless you pick your head up and have a look around.
I've worked for a few organizations where I've gone in as obviously a new employee, and they've had these processes in place for years and years and years. And I am one that likes to take shortcuts, but not in a way that is in detriment to the process. I like to see that I can do a shortcut and say, if something that takes 10 steps, well, perhaps I could maybe do it in 8. And so that makes it much more efficient. But you bring that up to management and they think, oh my God, you're mad. You don't know what you're talking about. Even when I've proven to them that these 8 steps work, and why don't you just bypass or get rid of the other two that are totally unnecessary? And so many times I've been called into the office and said, you can't do it like that. You have to stick to our 10 processes. And I think, but why? It's saving you money. It's saving me time. Why not do it? And this is what I'm, when you said, about blinders, that's what came up for me, was that sometimes management leaders have blinders on to a process, and they don't think that it can be done any other way than what they had in mind, for could be for millennia.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that, and it as entrepreneurs, that's something you have to be aware of all the time. Is you as an entrepreneur, you tend to be pretty strong-willed, and you want to do things this way or that way, but that doesn't mean it's the right way. Maybe that's the way to get it off the ground, but certainly that isn't the way, for things to be moving forward. So you should always be looking for, you should always be looking for the tiniest improvements. If I came to you and said, okay, this year we want to make a 1% improvement across the board. Everyone will go, we can do that. I mean, I can find a 1% efficiency somewhere. But if I have 100 people working for me and I ask to make a 1% improvement across the board over this year, everyone says yes. But that 1%, times 100 is 100, means that you've made this huge increase in efficiency. That should be your goal. Your goal should be to ensure that you are doing as much as humanly possible, as efficiently as humanly impossible. Well, ensuring that the people who are working for you are engaged in a way that makes them feel valued. And there's nothing worse than telling an employee, just like you had described, no, we're going to do it my way. Well, why? No reason, just because. That never makes you feel like, a valuable part of the team. That just makes you feel like, the proverbial cog in the wheel that could go missing and nothing would matter. So
Yeah, absolutely.
these small incremental improvements in a process add up to giant, giant gains. It's literally how you get from A to B. I mean, you get the old adage or the old proverb, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, is exactly that process. This idea that if you persist in these small, tiny gains, the place that will take you is something you cannot possibly imagine. And that works across if you're It works across if you want to sail around the world, or if you want to make some, if you want to make a major impact in business in your community. This idea of these small incremental gains is something that you just cannot simply, you cannot ignore.
Absolutely not. No, absolutely. Now, but people can find you on Facebook at Lead Brain AI. They can find you on LinkedIn at Bert Turhart. You've got a website, leadbrain.ai and bertturhart.com. Tell me what they'll find at the Lead Brain AI.
Well, I've been a tech guy for most of my adult life. I fell into programming a long time ago, and have managed to stay in that field primarily healthcare niche. But my father was a small businessman growing up in a small town in Canada, so I have a soft spot in my heart for small business. I think it's the backbone of our economy. I think that they're integral parts of our communities, and for small business people, the question that they often ask themselves is this client going to be my last client, or is this next client going to be the last of the clients I'm going to see for 6 months? So Lead Brain AI is my way to give back to the small business community by helping them, by placing small businesses directly in the conversation when someone asks, who do I buy from? So when people ask, who do I buy from, they ask that question online. These days, whether it's whatever search engine they choose to use, whether it's YouTube or whether it's Google or Bing, it doesn't matter. If you can place a small business directly in front of their ideal customer when they ask that question, that's a huge win for small business. So that's what Lead Brain's all about. We use AI to automate tasks just like you described. We'll alleviate some of the using AI and tech, we can alleviate some of the drudgery that goes with making sure that the business seems to run and runs well and is available 24/7, because that's the way people want things to run these days. And we use AI again to help tell stories so that Google can understand what it is that that business does in such a way that they put them directly in front of that customer when they ask that question, who do I buy from? So that's what Lead Brain AI is all about. And if you want to if you went to berttehart.com, or if you went to my LinkedIn page, or anywhere else, if you Googled my name, you'll come across all kinds of things that have to do with either the adventures or the travels, or they have to do with my books or whatever the case might be. So if you go to one of those two places, or three, like you had said, the leadbrain.ai or LinkedIn or at burtterritt.com, you're going to be able to find a thread that hopefully will interest you and will take you down the well, let's I want to call it a rabbit hole because that seems to give the wrong impression, but at least it'll take you to a place that might pique your interest.
Absolutely. Now I'm going to go and have a look at your LeadBrain AI and see what I can find in there. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us today. If you were to give some tidbit of wisdom to our audience today, what might that be?
Well, I think that the key to success is simply persistence. You don't have to be good. You don't have to be smart. You don't even have to be special. You just have to decide that you're going to persist in whatever it is that you're choosing to do. And if you will, I guarantee you, if you persist, you will succeed in ways that you cannot possibly imagine. That's better than any business plan. It's better than money in the bank. It's better than just about anything else that can possibly that you can possibly have. And the best part is that it's primarily free. You get to decide if you're going to persist or not. So don't ever underestimate the power of taking the next small, tiny step, and the steps after that, and the steps after that, and the steps after that.
Absolutely. Start off with the tiny steps and they'll lead you to big strides.
Yes, correct.
Absolutely. But thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
It's been mine, and from me to you, from here in British Columbia, you're I wish you all the well in Tasmania.
Okay, bye-bye for now.
Bye bye.
You've been listening to Talking with the Experts, hosted by Rose Davidson. Make sure you have a look at our back catalogue over at talkingwiththeexperts.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on any episode. We look forward to your company next time.